In the morning chanting reflections, in the reflections on dukkha, as the Buddha does in many places, he starts with where we begin from. Dukkha, dukkha, the ordinary feelings of discomfort. Birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. Death is dukkha. The painful experiences of ordinary everyday life. That's where we begin from. So the Buddha helps us to bring attention to the everyday, ordinary experience of the unawakened mind. But the reflection upon that and the acceptance of that is what leads towards transcendent, towards a liberated quality of mind. So by reflecting, birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, death is dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair, not getting what you want is dukkha, getting what you don't want is dukkha. By bringing attention to that, then the heart is enabled to acknowledge the laws of cause and effect. This is the way nature works. So that recognition is not to wallow in dukkha or to resent it or complain about it, but rather to shift the view from the person-centered, self-centered, to the Dhamma-centered, or nature-centered perspective. Birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, death is dukkha. So we're not celebrating it, we're not resenting it, we're just saying this is how nature works. So we guide the heart towards transcendence by acknowledging the worldly, the ordinary, limited, conditioned aspects of our experience. Similarly with the five subjects for frequent recollection. I'm of the nature to age, I'm of the nature to sicken, I'm of the nature to die, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise. I'm the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, and so forth. There's a lot of I ams. I am of the nature to age, of the nature to sicken, all that is mine. So it starts off by the ordinary, worldly habits of attachment, identification. Starts off from self-view. I am the body, I am the personality, these are my things. But by bringing attention to that, opening the heart to those conditioned patterns, that opens the way to the unconditioned. We repeat those verses, we say those words, but in the same breath, or at least in the same puja, we can also recognize rupang anatta. The body is not self. Vedana anatta. Feelings are not self. Perceptions, mental formations, anatta. Our emotions, our feelings of ownership, the sense of agency, all not self. So by acknowledging the conditioned, then the realization of the unconditioned is enabled. This is the Buddha's methodology. By bringing attention, by bringing awareness to the conditioned, that very awareness is the means whereby the conditioned is transcended. Knowing, oh, this is a reaction, this is liking, this is disliking, this is an opinion. It arises, it passes away. It's an event. It's not an absolute reality. So when we bring to mind these kind of reflections. I'm of the nature to age, I'm of the nature to sicken. Even though there's an I am written strongly, heavily into that reflection, by bringing it to mind, it awakens the realization that that which is born, that which is aging, that which is ailing, that which is dying, isn't actually, really, who and what we are. So by acknowledging the conditioned, the realization of the unconditioned is actualized. Seems ironic or strange, but this is the way it works. If we reject the conditioned and dismiss it, say it doesn't matter, it's just the conditioned world, it's just the wheel of birth and death, pah, who cares, it's just the conditioned realm, I'm only interested in the unconditioned. If there's a dismissal or rejection of the conditioned, that mysteriously it gives it false solidity, false substantiality. By opening the heart to the conditioned, to this body, these thoughts, these feelings, this world, this life, by fully opening the heart to the conditioned, not pushing it away, not like grasping hold or identifying with it, then the unconditioned is realized. That realization is enabled. The idea of the unconditioned is not the unconditioned. The word, the unconditioned, is not unconditioned. It's a word, these are ideas. We use the words to help lead into the direct realization. And that realization is a change of heart. Change of vision. So that the ordinary way in which the mind relates to seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, ideas, plans, memories, emotions, opinions, those habitual ways of relating to the field of experience is a change. It's a different view. The heart embodies that knowing quality without turning it into a person, without turning it into an I who's the doer, the experiencer, the agent of realization. And this is a subtle dimension of Dhamma practice, but I would say it's the most essential. It's what the practicing of Dhamma, the embodiment of Dhamma, genuinely is. It's not like I have got to get something I haven't got, or I've got to get rid of something that I don't want to have. The more that this process of realization, this change of view is established, strengthened, then the more clearly it's known that what is present is simply Dhamma aware of its own nature. This is what is here. The citta, the mind is Dhamma, it's not a person. What does it know? What is it aware of? It's aware of the natural order. Dhamma jati, that which is born of the Dhamma. So the more that there is the quality of wakefulness, and the greater degree to which those habits of conceit, self-view, are let go of, the more what is present, what is known in this field of experience. It's Dhamma aware of its own nature. That's all. Not an idea of that, not just the words describing that, but the actuality. Here it is. Dhamma aware of its own nature. And the patterns of form and sound and feeling and ideas that come and go are around the periphery, around the edges of that, but at the heart, at the very center. What is present is Dhamma aware of its own nature. Whether there's a sound or a feeling or a pleasant memory or a painful memory or an exciting plan or a worry about the future, those patterns of perception, they come and go and change. They're intrinsically empty, void of substance. The entire environment of experience, the fabric of experience, is Dhamma itself. And that which knows that experience, those patterns of perception, this is Dhamma as well. As Lumpu Cha put it very simply, inside is Dhamma, outside is Dhamma, everything is Dhamma. What is known is Dhamma, the knowing is Dhamma, everything is Dhamma. If the heart really awakens to that, embodies that, then what is present? Peacefulness, limitlessness, simplicity. This is what's here when all of that identification, grasping, those habits of attachment are dissolved or seen through. It doesn't make the mind into a kind of passive state when you talk in these kind of terms, like saying Dhamma aware of its own nature. It can sound a bit far out, spacey, like woo, some really kind of abstracted, non-physical, spaced out state. But no, that it's really speaking about the heart perfectly attuned to its own nature, to the body, to the material world, perfectly in tune with its own reality. That's all. Doesn't mean that there's a disconnection with the material world or sensory experience, what is seen or heard or tasted, smelt. There's nothing separate from that. This is why the great enlightened beings are not living in spaced out states, but rather inhabiting their own body, living comfortably in the world, functioning together with other people, engaged in conversation, activity. Taking action, making choices, engaging with the world, is not an intrusion upon that reality. It's an embodiment of it. That's all. That's all there is to it, really. We can think of peace as a sense of stillness or spaciousness and no thing happening, no thing coming along to bother me or to intrude upon my mind, my peacefulness, my practice. It can be peaceful in a way, but that kind of peace is very fragile. The peace of the heart, free of all greed, hatred, and delusion, is unshakable. Nothing can disturb it. Nothing can intrude upon it. Nothing can be a bother to it. The idea of botheredness just doesn't apply. The feeling or the idea, the attitude of waiting for something to be over so you can have a pleasant experience at the other end, doesn't apply. the heart that's genuinely awake, attuned to its own reality. It's not waiting for anything to be different, not lacking anything, not trying to get anything. Doesn't mean there's a passivity or that work isn't done. But as it says in the teaching, the heart doesn't fetter itself to specific goals or desired outcomes. We can set a direction, see what is likely to be helpful, beneficial, and see how things turn out. So work can be done, direction can be given, choices can be made, but there's no becoming. There's a directedness. We can have a goal to head in a particular direction, to convey some meaning in a conversation. Yes, but the heart is not fettered to a specific outcome. So, a direction is given, effort is made, a particular task is undertaken, but the heart is completely at ease with that process. There's a goal-directedness, but no becoming, because there's no person. There's no person to become. So, action can be taken, direction can be given, and there's nothing burdensome, nothing stressful. There's no I or me or mine involved. Now, in these last days of our formal retreat time, these are useful teachings, useful principles to take to heart. Can we find that place where action is being taken and the mind, the heart, relates to the sensory world with this quality of spaciousness, timelessness? The heart simply awake to its own nature and then letting speech and action flow forth from that wakefulness. Can that be done? And when that is done, when that is actualized, how does it feel? What's the felt sense of relating to the field of experience in this way? How is it? We can know for ourselves directly. Get a feel for that quality of peaceful, harmonious attunement, but which is a dynamic kind of peace, an energetic peace. Not a disconnection or a numbing or a sealing off, as a connectedness, an attunement. But like the sound of harmoniously arranged musical instruments, it's energetic, but there's a tunefulness, an accord, an integration. There's a peacefulness, a naturalness, an ease, a delight that's there. Even in the midst of energy and activity, there's peacefulness, there's the quality of accord, the quality of balance. When those moments arrive, when they're realized, when they're known, let that into the heart. Get a feel for that. And let that guide your actions, your words, your engagement of this life with the world around us.